This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Welcome, listeners. This is Brent Sutton. Welcome to Season 4 and the 87th episode of the Practice Learning Teams podcast show. Today's slightly different. I want to have a chat to you about an event that's being held in Phoenix, Arizona on May 9th and 10th of 2023. It's called Safety Worlds Collide. And it's myself, Jay Allen, and my safety brother, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd. In the true notion of Sam, get ready for a wild ride as we dive into real-world applications, practical solutions, and innovative ideas. And the best part, you'll be in good company. We'll be there with a group of people. We're not there to tell you. We're not there to speak to you. We're there to share with you war stories and help you walk away feeling part of a larger safety community. We're going to raise the bar. Day one is all about the future of safety and performance organisations. We'll be looking at current trends around human operator performance, and we'll be talking about building high performance learning teams. And day two, we'll be exploring innovations in safety technology, the role of culture in organisational safety, measuring the impact of safety programs, and building a safety-centred workplace. As we said before, this is about you participating. We're not going to drown you with PowerPoints. We're going to be there working with you on real-world problems. So please, enjoy this episode with Sam as we explore a range of topics that we want to bring to you. And it's going to be a hell of a ride.
What about a first-time event? I love the title, Safety Worlds Collide.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we have to, since he's not here, I guess we'll have to give him credit. But I think Jay actually birthed that idea, and it was, love it, right? I mean, I was like, yeah, that sounds right to me.
Wow. I feel like I need to have a pseudonym, because you're the hot nerd. I could just be the learning teams guy. That's easy.
That's it. Yeah. We need to think of something.
What do we call Jay? What, Dr. Change?
Maybe, yeah.
Doctor, we can't call him the love doctor. That'll be a whole different situation.
Different. That's a different conference.
That's the next day in Phoenix.
You know, when you really think about it, though, if you think outside into the greater kind of community of what it is that we get to do, I mean, everyone has a nickname, and you're lacking of a nickname. So we're gonna have to put some thought into this. I don't know that we're gonna solve it right here.
Well, I annoy Ron Gant because Ron likes to rhyme, and Brent doesn't rhyme, and I keep challenging him to come up with a rhyme. So if you're listening in, Ron, come up with a rhyme.
There you go. That's what we yeah. need.
Yeah. And of course, when we're in Australia, the Australians always try and shorten all your names, so it doesn't shorten either.
Yeah. What. Yeah. That's true, right? Yeah. There's got to be something. There's got to be something out there that somebody can come up with. So I guess where I'm going with this is your email inbox is about to be flooded with nicknames.
Bring it on. That's author@learningteamsinc.com.
There you
Bring
go.
It Bring
there
it on. But hey, look, I think the concept, once again, you know, in this journey, we're all trying to help organizations do better things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I keep reminding people the absence of harm has got nothing to do with uncontrolled risks being present in everyday work.
Yeah.
And how we get there can be varied. And, you know, the fact is, you know, the type of work that you're doing is true to the fact that we're wanting people to not only think about safety differently, but also how to practice safety differently.
Right. Yeah.
Because there is no one true way or one true method or one true approach that's going to do that. Because you've got, you know, you're always going to have a safety system or a system of work that's always going to be brittle by its nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you've got people who are dynamic by their nature. And then you've got the work itself, which is dynamic. And so when I think about, you know, safety worlds collide, sorry, pardon me. For the people in the front line, their safety world's colliding every day.
Yeah.
Yet somehow they're adapting to that and they're being successful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I see Phoenix as actually being a celebration.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the big takeaway for me is that it's that. I love the way that you put that. And, you know, I hadn't thought about that to this point yet, but this idea that, you know, those safety worlds are colliding every single day with folks out there just trying to get GSD, you know, just folks out there getting stuff done every single day. And they're colliding against a lot of times systems that they're having to overperform, systems that they're having to make do and adapt their way around, sometimes veer completely away from just to make something happen. Right. So I think that's a really interesting point that you bring up, because, again, I hadn't thought about it in that perspective yet. But that's a really, really great point. And then to your point, I think it is a celebration. It's a celebration that we all have unique approaches. And that's what I think is great. All unique approaches founded in some really important principles, I believe, is kind of the kind of the key underlying piece of that. But that those things come together and we just have a really great conversation. That's the way that I've been, as people have contacted me about this event, that's kind of the way that I've been talking about it, is it's kind of a safety conference with like an asterisk beside it. It's like not a conference.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's to me, I keep talking to people. This is going to be a really big involved conversation. It's going to be awesome. We're going to get together and have a really great conversation. And that's the part that I'm looking forward to. I don't know about you, but that's my favorite part of this whole thing. Is exactly what we're getting to do right now. And especially if we can do that in a larger scale of sitting down and having that conversation and talking through these things, I think that's the magic stuff.
Yeah, and look, the great thing is they will come along with their stories.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are really lucky. We've seen hundreds of stories.
Yeah.
In what we do. So it is a conversation. They're not being talked to. They're not being talked at. May not necessarily be a big group loving, but it is going to be where we're going to try and dig deeper into those things.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have this thing at the moment, we're calling it the Trojan mouse, which is, you know, don't try and create the transformational change. Create that staircase from the front line, work it up,
mm-hmm.
prep the leaders from the top down. Okay, because that staircase is going to come together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, just that whole notion of understanding how in everyday normal work, we can actually affect change that not only enriches those that face the risk, helps them to better understand and to learn from that, but can also create operational improvement that improves bottom line profitability, operational time, quality, production, all the other stuff that people want.
Yeah.
So,
well, how often have you seen that? And I think I know I'm guilty of that. We all get a bit guilty of that because we're drawn in or have been drawn in by the allure of safety. And safety is often a catalyst that brings a lot of this thought into an organization. But how often have you seen that, right? It kind of starts, we start having this air quotes here for anybody that's listening, just safety conversation around hop stuff, safety differently, whatever we want to call it. And we start to do some of that. And then quickly everyone else in the organization doing everything else is like, hey, can I get some of that? That sounds, so to your point, it's just overall it's strategies to betterment, really, you know, of just making things better overall. You start to see that growth take place pretty rapidly. Once an organization gets a taste of doing things, I won't even say safety, just doing things a bit differently, rooted in those principles, we start to just see learning kind of go to the max, right? We start to see this innovation start to kind of go to the max. And especially because we're tying that into learning from the folks that understand it the best, right? And not only learning from them, but starting to understand how things actually happen within our work worlds, we've held a lot of assumptions about how we assume things have gotten done in the past, and how often is that accurate? It very rarely, right? So we're starting to see all those holes. We're starting to see all those opportunities for, as you said, it can be growth in anything that we want to see growth in, betterment, anything that we want to see betterment in. I have rarely, if ever, seen a true, an organization that is truly on their hop journey just say, no, that's just safety stuff. I've never seen that happen. No, I've never, ever seen that happen in my
head.
It's the value of it's quickly realized. And if you're just trying to contain it to safety, risk, quality kind of stuff, you're kind of wasting some of your investment, right? You're kind of squandering a lot of that investment, because it goes far and wide, or it should go far and wide.
And I think the challenge organizations have is how to make it sustainable practice.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I see it all every day with people saying, you know, look, I don't think I can facilitate a learning team very well. Okay. We all have the capacity or the capability to actually have a conversation, have a talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
But throwing someone in the deep end and saying, just do it, isn't the answer.
No, no.
So we need to give people some sort of roadmap, pathway. And that's why for us, the whole 4Ds thing was a great way to start a conversation. I've never, ever had someone say to me, I can't share a story about something that was dumb, dangerous, difficult, or different. It's never happened.
Yeah.
Normally what happens is you get overwhelmed with stories.
Yeah.
And
It's similar. It's similar to any of those kind of mechanisms, right? When we talk about using a learning team, especially in kind of maybe formal or informal kind of setting of a learning team, right? Once organizations kind of get a grasp on that, it's really easy for them to spiral into learning team crazy, right? Yeah. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's like you still have finite time and resources. Let's remember this. Okay. Let's do these where they matter.
Yeah.
So it's, and to your point, it's almost overload rather than the opposite.
And that's why, and you know, one of the things that I'll be talking about is that we can't use our traditional intervention approaches.
Yeah.
Whether it be hot or normal stuff, doesn't matter. You can't be everywhere every time.
Yeah.
And there's that difference between control and there's a difference between that and there's that listening. Mm-hmm. Identifying the peaks or those patterns of those weak signals, and then doing that deeper understanding using a learning team.
Yeah.
Because you can learn anywhere at any time. And we've been talking about the concept of what we call targeted learning.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one of the projects we've been working on is how to make visible the transparency between blue line, black line. And in particular, we have this gap between residual risk and normal work. And our systems are focusing on looking at all the stuff up until residual risk. But what do we do with that bit that's left over?
Right.
And that's what we're doing a lot of work around, the 4Ds. Not only can tell us if those critical steps or those critical controls can work or not, but what's happening in that gray space?
Yeah.
And what are the themes? And what we're seeing, Sam, is that those weak signals that we see in those themes, they come and go. It's like a game of whack-a-mole.
Right. That's exactly right. Okay.
They don't go away, because there's this thing that safety people think their job is to fix stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I don't have a problem saying, let's build better defenses. Let's build a better system. But those weak signals will keep coming.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I think you see that, right? Because there's a couple things at play there that I think that folks that are kind of on that find and fix mission, and whether that's something that they've picked up themselves, a lot of times I've seen that be kind of organizationally induced, not to go too deep down the practitioner rabbit hole, but that's some of my nerd space, right?
Yeah.
I think that you see that practitioners embracing that role a lot of times as the safety fixer, because or just a fixer in general, right? In a lot of ways. That's because I don't know that the organizations really have a better definition of what a practitioner should be doing. And that's something that's really easy for them to see and measure of their air quotes again, effectiveness, right? So I've got a list of 20 things that my safety practitioner fixed last week. That's good. If they do 7, that's bad. If they do none, they're fired. You kind of get where I'm going. There's a bit of that we can see it. We can visibly see it. We can observe it. We can measure it. So I can measure performance. And that's the only way that I know how to define the role of a practitioner, right? So that's kind of the way that we've been doing that. And then you have the practitioner just going, well, that's my expectation. That's what I need to be doing. Obviously, we're going to meet those expectations because we want to remain employed, even if it's not the most effective use of our time,
yeah.
Right? So I think you've got that kind of piece that feeds into that. But the other point that I was going to make there is that anyone that has ever seen, and I'm assuming here, but I think it is a pretty good gamble to say that everyone that's listening to our conversation is probably very well familiar with heavy industrial sites, or mm-hmm. very, very well familiar with large organizations that do probably some scary stuff. I think that's probably the majority of our audiences, Brent, if I had to guess. If they didn't have the opportunity for catastrophic outcomes or seriously not good things happening, they'd probably be listening to something way more interesting than you and I would bet. But as soon as you right the ship, so to speak, as soon as you fix that one thing, it instantly starts to degrade. Right? So to your point of whack-a-mole, right? There's an infinite number of things that you can fix. And as you fix them, they automatically start turning to crap again. Right. So I think to your point, it's this idea of just find and fix. There's an element of that maybe that exists within that role of helping to consult to those folks to help them find things or things to look at to maybe fix. But I think there's a difference between finding and fixing and finding and actually making things better.
Right? Yeah, I think because workers are having to find fix anyway.
Yeah. Exactly.
If this was in Holland, they're at the dike, you know, plugging the leaks.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they're doing the whole time.
Yeah.
In between something called productivity and something else, but that's what they're doing all the time.
Right.
And if I think about, you know, and maybe during our 2 days, we can talk about the role of a modern safety practitioner because I think they've got multiple roles. I mean, I think about it from terms that they have a risk and assurance role because the system, the organization has said that this is our system for managing risk. So there's an assurance part around that because risk management says that, you know, we put these things in place on a whole set of assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
We need to understand those assumptions because those assumptions change.
Right.
Their role is also that of actually enabling continuous improvement. Because risk management says that things change.
Yeah.
So we need to understand change. And it used the word understand change. It doesn't say fix change.
Right.
Because it says we need to look for the opportunities for improvement.
Mm.
Now, that's a really interesting language. Not fix, not blame, not punish.
Yep.
And then there's the human component.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is how do we get workers engage the front line that helps them to build knowledge and understanding, because building knowledge and understanding actually helps to improve our lives.
Yeah.
As people, you know, curiosity, all those wonderful things. So this is not, you know, going to the front line, identifying who needs more training.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and that's one that stands out because I've been having that conversation quite a bit recently around, training, right? And I won't dive too far down this rabbit hole, but what's the old quote? You train dogs, not people, right? And so I've been having this really great conversation around so much workplace training in general tends to just read procedures at people, and it doesn't really do much to actually grow competency, right? When growth of competency is really what we're seeking, we want to render folks highly competent, right? Or help to render them highly competent. And in a lot of the particular work that I do, it's rendering multiple levels throughout an organization highly competent in critical risks.
Sure.
Right? And critical risk controls, as we were kind of saying. So there is a piece of that, right? But again, as you mentioned training, as soon as the organizations start talking training with me, I kind of get that little like almost involuntary kind of like gag reflex.
Yeah. Well, look, I even think the word, I think the word competency is so overused.
It is, yes, yeah, absolutely.
I look at it through the lens of we want people to have capacity,
right?
and we want them to have capability.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because competency is something else.
Yeah.
And sadly, in some of the work that I do around, you know, fatalities, like when I do work in the forestry sector, none of those people were lacking with qualifications or tickets.
Right.
Or, you know, educational thing. None of that was lacking.
Yeah.
So I go back to it and saying, you know, what was their capacity in that work? Because they were always running at those margins.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that capability to understand that?
Yeah.
So, and those are non-technical skills that help us. So we'll be having a good chat about I'm really keen to have a good chat during those 2 days, that our systems are forcing people to evaluate and assess, but evaluation and assessment doesn't actually create learning. We want people to be able to critically appraise the system. You know, we talk about we want people to be able to critically think. Well, how does it actually happen? Like, you don't set them on a course to critically think.
Right.
So I'll be keen to share and show people different organizational approaches where we've actually used the power of humans, the power of working in a team, the power of a system to actually build that capacity and that capability. And people, I mean, you know, we talk about speak up or speak in. I got to tell you, I don't know how organizations actually know how to listen.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, speaking up is another bullshit word for reporting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Don't put the load on them. Okay. Work out how as an organization can I listen.
Yeah. Well, exactly. It's to me, it's no different than any of those other kind of EU-based campaigns that organizations tend to migrate towards. From my mindset, is some of it's because that I don't know that they recognize that there's anything else they could do. Some of it probably from the idea that it's, well, it really is their responsibility. I don't know, right? There's probably 100 different reasons we could dive into why they gravitate towards those particular approaches. I think there's an element of ease to that as well, right? That kind of falls into what it's back to things I can actually put my hands on and do. I can do that. I can send that email. I can print those posters. I can hang those things up.
Like, you know, use your voice.
Yeah. Well, it's no different than say something.
I haven't employed mutes in the business. Right. Okay. People won't use their voice if they feel they're not listened to.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. Well, it's no, to me, all those kind of things fall in the same bucket that I'd probably place, same similar bucket that I'd place something as stop work, that I'd place some of those other things, right? That's just very down to the end user, that it's a choice that you're making to err, basically. Right. If you choose to not stop, if you choose to not say something, you chose to do that thing. Right. Well, it tends to go in that direction more than anything that I would consider to be positive.
And this might upset some hot people, but that there is cause and effect in that.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So if you can't listen, people won't share. That's pure cause and effect.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
That's not complex.
It's very similar. It's very similar to the conversation that we have around trust, and a very popular buzzword of psychological safety right now as well too. Right? To me, it's very similar in that cause effect that you see with trust. That organizations are very quick to say you should trust us, but they rarely ever extend trust down through genuine trust down through the organization to the folks that we might call a practitioner, or the folks that we would call on the coalface. Right? That trust doesn't exist. It's a one-way street in that world. And so I think in voice, most organizations, whether they say speak up or not, operate a one-way street of voice. I will speak down to you. You can speak up and you should, but I'm just not listening.
Yeah. I mean, look, every time the psychological safety word's being used to me, I get a little bit of reflux.
Same.
And, you know, when I run a learning team, they talk about, oh, how are you going to build trust? I said, well, rule number one, I listen.
Yeah.
Rule number two, I give them the capacity to engage. Rule number three, I respect their view. Rule number four. So if you want rules, I've got a set of rules that I follow.
There you go.
Okay. And so, well, how do we prepare our people? And I said, you don't. Okay. Because it doesn't matter what you put in writing to them, they are going to come into that room skeptical of how they've been treated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, and I'm expecting people to start from all different places.
Yeah.
Okay. My job as a facilitator is to do that, is to see that and support people. And they are shocked at them because they say, oh, you're not going to get any information out of these guys. These guys are just,
I love that.
Too hard, too tough. I said, look, that's fine, mate. I said, I'm coming in the room. I don't need a strong light bulb. I don't have a rolled up piece of newspaper. I don't have all those techniques that you've been using.
Yeah.
I'm just coming in to get them to start sharing stories. And one of the things that I do, Sam, which is really interesting, behind me, if there's like a whiteboard or I have a big piece of paper behind me, I just put up the four D's in a quadrant and my name alongside it. That's it.
Yeah.
And everyone's coming and they start looking.
Yeah. Well, I think you're talking about growing the big C word that we were just using about before there a little bit. You're starting to pique some curiosity, right? Yeah. But then on as a facilitator, you're demonstrating listening and true curiosity, right? Which I think that I find in organizations, a lot of employees haven't necessarily experienced someone that is genuinely curious about how stuff actually gets done.
Well, right? it's been bashed out of them by rules.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so when they feel that, and you can feel that when someone's genuinely curious about what it is that you do for a living, right? You can feel that and it automatically starts to build that bridge for you. Right. You start kind of putting those bricks into that bridge. Starting with curiosity. And I really appreciate your rules to that point. Right. But it's extending that curiosity and saying, no, like, I'm really just genuinely curious about what it is that you guys get to do for a living. I think it's neat. Like, explain it to me. And I find that almost always, as you said, everyone has stories. I think a lot of times folks in organizations are just waiting for someone to be genuinely curious and want to listen. Mm-hmm. They open up as soon as they're like, wait a second, you're curious and you really want to know. This is new. This is new for me. Okay, I'll tell you.
So we were working with a bunch of guys this week, and they do work in a naval shipyard.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some organization per se, there were some issues around bullying, harassment. Okay.
Yeah.
So we ran a little learning team, and the guys were there for like 90 minutes. And we came back for the second session a couple of days later, and we'd taken all the themes from the guys, and put it into the 4D model for them.
Yeah.
And put all the stuff in all sticky notes. And the guy said, wow, is that all the stuff that we shared the last time? Yeah. Wow, we had no idea we had shared that much. And they were taken back.
Yeah.
Because all they were doing was sharing stories, and all we're seeing are the themes that were coming from those stories. And then we started to ask them to give us some clarification. And you could just see everything was just changing for them.
Yeah.
And you could just see how they just started to relax, because listening was now moving to deeper understanding.
Yeah.
Because the first thing just wanted them to get stuff out.
Yeah.
Okay. Because we're doing, sense making. That's ultimately what we're trying to start with in that process.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting. Then during one of the breaks, one of the safety guys walked in and looked at some of the things on the board, and you could see that he went into react mode, not respond mode.
Yeah.
And I remember something that Rob Fisher told me. And I said to the guy, just pause, just tap the finger on your wrist. And now have a look at it. Just have a pause, just have a little breathe in and share with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's this whole thing that we spend all this time reacting. So this person just picked out one thing and personalized it to him. And in this case, what the workers were saying is that these things that they call JCAs, or these you know, pre-what's-the-name things.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's all done. They have to fill them in off a job card. It has to get two other signatures. They then go down to the job and they find out the job card of the job is totally disconnected. Mm-hmm. They've got to go back and rewrite an entire new JSEA and then find get that approved by two other people. Like, where's the madness? Where's the madness?
Unfortunately common, but yeah, exactly. And the end result is madness, which is common.
Yeah. And that was causing, so in this environment, they got multiple contractors working on multiple things. And it was creating the environment for bullying and all those things to be present.
Yeah.
Because now they're under time pressure. So you know, I just go back to it. But, you know, I'm trying to say the organization, the system is creating the environment. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, no, people are being bullies. I'm saying you are, the system is taking the margin out of the person. Because we all have the capability to, I say going postal, but we have the capability of, you know, moving over our edge of reason and moving right into reacting.
Yeah, of course.
So what you're seeing is reaction.
Yeah.
Not responding. We need, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it was really fascinating. So look, I'm super pumped. It's going to be a great time. Super excited. Never been to Phoenix. Okay.
We're going to have fun.
Yeah.
We've got to get in early. We're going to have fun. And anybody that's coming, we're going to be doing some stuff after, right? I think we're still hammering out what those plans look like, but there's going to be a lot of community stuff. We're just going to have fun. It's going to be a great time.
Yeah. And I've topped up my medical insurance and life insurance. Just kidding. So it's all good. And looking forward to enjoying that sort of spring element of Phoenix as well before it moves into super hot.
Yeah,
and I just hope
it'll probably be pretty decent.
Yeah, but
it'll be decent dry for us. It'll probably be in the upper 80s.
Yeah, but that's always a dry heat, not a humid.
Come on, man. If we
always, yeah.
No, rarely. If you're here during our monsoon season,
yeah,
then you can get a little bit of humidity. If you're here during a monsoon season, we get some haboobs, the really big dust storms.
Yeah.
We get those from time to time around those storms as well. But that's usually about the only time you're going to see much humidity. And when I say much, it's not a lot compared to anywhere else on the planet, probably.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
For us, it's much, you know, but yeah, you're going to have less. It should be sunny and beautiful and probably a touch warm, not hot, but warm.
No, we can handle that. Look, last month I was in Tampa with Todd and Jay, and the risk was the iguanas falling out of the tree because it was too cold. So now I'll be getting to Phoenix where it's going to be warm and hot, and the scorpions are coming after. Well,
yeah, so you might see one, and maybe. Excuse me. Got all excited thinking about scorpions. Choked myself up here. No, so you could very well. So we've had a few here and there around the house. We have them every now and again, you know. You'll see some probably, you know, if we do get to go out and go jeeping anywhere, you might see some snakes. You might see some definitely some scorpions, maybe some tarantulas.
Yeah.
See some very large reptiles that like to wander around and eat all the below. You know, they like to munch mm-hmm. on those things, so you can find those here and there too. We have some javelina that run around. We might see some javelina. You'll definitely spot some coyotes. So we got plenty of those as well. My favorite. I know we're way off subject here, but my absolute favorite Arizona critter of all time is the Roadrunner, though. Love seeing the Roadrunner.
Yeah,
so I might
wow.
get to spot a Roadrunner here. That's always a blast. That. Yeah. But yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is there's a ton of stuff to do for folks coming out. You know, the great thing is I shared with you and Jay the other day. I went down and walked down the venue and checked out the area that it's in. There's a lot of great stuff down there as well. The right, you know, food nearby, great hotels nearby for anybody that's traveling out here. And so I don't know about you. I don't know about everybody else out there listening. The conference is what draws me to something, but I like to explore the surrounding areas too while I'm in town. You know, for me, I'm fortunate this is my backyard. But there's plenty of that. So there's plenty of that. So folks that aren't necessarily familiar with Phoenix, I would share with them to not be fearful. Phoenix is a really fun place to come hang out.
And what's the local delicacy? What's the thing? What's Phoenix famous for in terms of food and in terms of beverage?
Well, you have to go. Obviously, we're in Arizona, we're Phoenix. We have, in my opinion, and I'm going to get a lot of hate here. Okay, I'm going to get a lot of hate here from friends in Southern California and from friends in Texas. But I think as far as stateside Mexican food goes, Phoenix is probably it. We have this great Sonoran kind of based cuisine. Wonderful. You obviously have that. Phoenix is odd in the sense that everyone that I've ever met, other than I can count on probably one hand, maybe two, but I'm thinking one hand of all the folks that I know in Arizona that are actually from Arizona, like born and raised here. So at least in Phoenix is a city of transplants. So Phoenix has an amazing melting pot of culture. So there's anything. I mean, you can really find a pretty good quality of just about anything that you would want at some place in the valley. So if you're coming to Arizona, though, I have to always direct people towards Navajo tacos, because that is the state food of Arizona. If you're familiar with fry bread, and they basically kind of taco on top of fry bread. And for me, I will tell you, it is a fat boy's dream. It's wonderful. It's taco meat and fried bread and cheese and a minimal amount of vegetables, which is nice, and some taco sauce. And you can dress that up however you want to. That's always a have to go to must if you've never had one of those, because again, it is the state food. As far as beverages go, there's tons of microbreweries. There's several distilleries kind of around the city as well too. I mean, it's just really anything you want to get into.
Phoenix, I'm pretty super much excited. It's going to be so good.
Yeah. Food truck scene has been really growing lately too. So I will share that with folks that there are some excellent restaurants, but if you're into the food truck stuff, there are some amazing, amazing food and coffee trucks that float around.
Oh, look, I absolutely agree, because, you know, I mean, the artisans, those food trucks aren't what we used to think, you know, they're now artisans.
No, yeah. It's magic. It's magic. Yeah. It's magic in a package delivery truck. Usually.
Yeah.
It's magic. That's right. Absolute magic.
That's right. So I think for our listeners.
Go ahead there.
That's right. I think for our listeners, probably sort of, a thing for them, you know, with the program we're going to be running, it's going to be over 2 days. And we've created a series of themes from those 2 days. And there's going to be a lot of organic element across that. So we're not PowerPointing you to death. Okay. There's no keynotes, I think, as you said, Sam. We're going to be taking those themes. We're going to be exploring those themes through different lenses. We're going to be, you know, talking about, you know, the barriers. We're going to be really getting into the guts and the soul of it. And, you know, I am super hopeful that everyone will walk away with a call to action.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's going to be some of the magic sauce in our little get together for sure. And I know there's a large conversation happening around this, but I know the things that I end up focusing on from day to day. I know the folks that you spend time with and the things you end up focusing on from day to day, Jay as well. All of, I'm speaking for me, but I'm assuming this is probably across the board with our little group of folks. Everything that I end up doing day to day is we're talking, how do you actually operationalize these things and make them sustainable? So to your point on call to action, we're not talking lofty kind of just theoretical stuff. We're talking experience and conversations and how you actually bring this stuff to life and keep it alive within your organization for the long haul, right? Which I think is important. I think it's important. I know that's what so many folks are looking for out there. And so if that is something that they're looking for, this is definitely a conversation you want to be a part of, right? I mean, this is exactly that. It's operationalizing these concepts and making them sustainable. Because again, I think that the latter is a part that often gets overlooked in organizations. So as we start to talk sustainability, I think that's, again, one of those themes that's highly valuable. It's going to be an amazing conversation during our get-together.
And I'm hoping to zoom in some special international guests as well.
Yeah, super surprise, super secret, right? We're keeping them all super secret.
Yeah, but they'll be able to share. They'll share with the group. some of their little journey themselves and some things that's worked well for them and, and that change. So I'm super excited that we'll be able to bring those people in as well. So it's going to be a true, it's like United Nations of hot people. So it's going to be good.
Yeah, that's I love that. So that's just another reason, right? Be there, be square, be there and miss out, right? You never know who might pop in on the screen.
Yeah, and we'll try and bring some merch. You know, that's it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly. Well, speaking of which, I don't have one on right now, but I'd posted a picture that I ordered some of that wacky Ramones logo thing that we pulled together. With the bat and the safety shit and stuck in the eagle and her names on it. And I posted about that. I need to keep putting it out there, but I am in the process of trying to give away some of these t-shirts. So any folks that, if you go find that post on my LinkedIn, you can share that and get entered to win one of those t-shirts. Again, selected at random. I'll reach out to you for your address and you folks can get some merch beforehand too, which is kind of neat. So, and plus merch at the event, which would be kind of cool. I think we need to do like an on tour shirt. We'll just do different cities on the back.
Yeah.
We'll hey, just start, we'll just start, I'm, we'll start I'm, striking I'm, them off as we hit them.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean,
it looked like a tour t-shirt.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think, you know, once again, I'm up there the week before I'm up at Banff with Energy Safety Canada, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Doing a keynote the day after Todd. And once again, the appetite from senior safety people just wanting to learn from everyday work has just exploded.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, this time a year ago, or 80 months ago, people were saying, how do I do investigations differently? Okay. Mm-hmm. It's exploded. We're now on this other continuum, which is how do I learn from normal work?
Yeah. Exactly. It's awesome to see. It's awesome to see that explosion of growth. Because, and again, as they've started to maybe shift that understanding and move towards trying to explore normal work. And as we were kind of talking, I know some of what I plan on kind of talking about as we get together is this kind of sense of extreme operational curiosity. And as that curiosity grows, as operational curiosity grows, and then they start to try to tinker with some of this stuff, and then they start to get a taste of, as we were kind of mentioning before, and then it kind of catches fire. And then they really want to go down that path of, okay, I need a bit of a framework here. I need to figure out how to make this sustainable over time, as we were just kind of talking about. I think folks are starting to really accept that, not only accept it, but desire it so much more than maybe our more traditional approaches, because the output that they're getting from it, from those techniques, is so much higher quality, right? As we were kind of saying earlier, we're not necessarily seeking to always solve, we're seeking to understand. Right. And that's such a difference, right? Going down this path of seeking true understanding, or as close to understanding it as we can. I've felt that explosion, as you were just kind of saying as well. You're just kind of seeing this massive growth in folks that are wanting to go down this path more of seeking to understand through some form of curiosity around normal work, which is amazing. It's amazing to see. I think as that, from what I've kind of seen so far, I don't see that growth slowing down. Folks are starting to realize, like, wait a second, this is valuable, this is powerful, this is not only different, but it's the output side of this is way different than what we're
doing. We shouldn't be scared of saying it. This can actually reduce cost. This can improve productivity. I don't know why we're scared of these words. It's not the potential. This shifts safety from being compliance and a burden, and of being no value, to stepping up and becoming the potential of being a change maker.
Yeah. And I, you know, dare I say, leading us towards innovation, right? I think that's the piece that I found really interesting, because there's so much creativity that comes along with this stuff too, right? And drives us kind of towards more innovative approaches overall. And so to your point, I think I can think of multiple stories, as I'm sure you can, with various kind of learning team, learning exploration kind of stuff, right? Where I've heard these stories of folks were like, we started out with this learning team because we thought that this was the valuable thing that we should be looking into. And we found out that there wasn't a lot of learning in this particular thing, but we solved like three other things. which was to your point, right? Kind of this idea that like, and it might have been completely not safety related, which is fine. Like that's okay, that's great. It doesn't, better is better, kind of in my book, right? If we're creating efficiency, why not, right? If we're creating quality improvements, why not, right? Again, safety might be the catalyst that might start us down that road or lead us to start even a learning team sometimes. But we've started on it just because it's in that safety bucket, but we find out that the learning is much farther away from safety than maybe what we assumed to begin with, but there's still something to learn there, right?
And the great news is that operational change, that operational improvement, that operational excellence can be measured.
Yeah.
So for all those people out there that want to measure, come on down. Join us for 2 days.
Right. Yep, absolutely. I've got a feeling we'll get into probably a hefty measuring conversation at some point.
I love it, which is great. Yeah, because the thing is, organizations want to measure. Let's give them something that they can measure that creates value. You know, people say to me, how can we stop, you know, reporting TRIFA and LTIs, MTIs, all the other stuff? I say, give them something they can measure that shows value.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so much of that conversation is you're wanting to, especially when you're measuring, right? If you are an organization that's really kind of hot and heavy with measuring things, they get, I think, not to divert us too far here, but we get so focused on the measure itself that we don't think through the unintended consequences of the measuring itself. Right. Yeah. And if you go back to even just the basics, maybe old school measuring, is the thought with measuring is you want to drive those intended positive consequences, not the unintended ones. Right. So even stepping that conversation back, but kind of behind this idea that, well, all measuring is good measuring, that's clearly not the fact. Right. Backing up to stuff that might be more meaningful and drives us towards the things that we hope to actually see occur in our work worlds while trying to minimize those unintended consequences. I don't know that we have that unintended consequences conversation enough. We're clearly having it well still going on out in the open around stuff like measures around zero. And in our world, I think for you guys, it's TRIFR. For us, it's TRIR. Same thing, right? Basically the same thing. We're still having that conversation a little bit here and there.
I don't think zero is going to go away. I just think it's been, my concern is we're going to move away from the concept of zero to the concept of constantly caring.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We're gonna replace four-letter term with another bullshit four-letter term.
Unplug, plug in. Right. Yeah. I think that you have that, right? Where then, even with zero, I mean, I think to have an honest conversation around zero, I think that even folks that are zealots in the opposite, kind of anti-zero folks, right? I think you still have to acknowledge that zero in itself is a noble goal. I think you have to couple that with the idea that it's probably a really crap measure because it drives us toward silence.
Right? Yeah.
But I think you've got to have an honest conversation about those things to where, you know, so much of the conversation I've had around air quotes here for anyone that's listening. I do a lot of air quotes, so I feel the need to say that every time I wave my hands around. But so much of what I've kind of had a conversation around is that we don't need a new yardstick. And we don't need to take our old yardsticks and kind of bedazzle them and glue like cool fancy fake diamonds on them and make them look better or seem like they're better. What I find organizations kind of desiring to move towards is this idea of a sight glass more than a yardstick, a way to be able to peer into, as we were talking, normal work, so much of exactly what we're talking about, right? I need a looking glass, not a measuring stick. I want to be able to peer into operational reality without upsetting it through goals, targets, and hard measuring. I think that's a really interesting conversation to have that's kind of happening. I don't know that that's happening a lot out in the open currently, but I know a lot of organizations are having that conversation of how do we go from hard measures to seeking to understand. It's kind of the same place where we've been talking, right? How do I create a sight glass into the machine?
And I think, Sam, all those things are actually, I've been doing some, one of the organizations I've been doing some work with, they've recently gone through the ISO 45001 audit with Hoffman Learning Teams. Okay. And, you know, when it comes to measurement, because measurement's part of ISO. It talked about that measurement can be performance based, but measurement can also be evaluative based. Mm-hmm. Now, when you ask people what does evaluative mean, they look at you blankly, because we've been used to driving everything through a performance based measurement system. But our standards, these things that exist, say it can be evaluative. So, I've been doing a lot more work recently and actually being able to bring those two worlds together so that we can say we've done X number of engagements with our front line. These were the key risks that we're able to evaluate during those engagements. Here were the themes that came from those engagements. Here were the learnings that we gained. And here were the changes or improvements that were put in place. Yeah, if you want to measure shit, you can measure it. And I tell you what, if someone senior up saw that, what they're getting is context. And exactly. What senior leader can say is they can now be curious and say, what more can we do to support good work?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's where, so much of our kind of historic measures, they've been purposefully devoid of context, right? We've tried to, through simplification, bring them down into something that's one or a zero, black or white, red, yellow, green.
Color, arrow, right? This up, kind of idea down, of like,
up, down, good, bad, right? It's good or bad. There's nothing in between. And I think a lot of where I find organizations that are kind of maturing on their journeys, at least moving towards, is, whoa, like, let's do the opposite of that. Let's try to add as much meaningful context into our measures as we can, because without context, they're meaningless anyways. It really doesn't tell me anything. An up arrow or a down arrow without a good dose of context tells me a whole bunch of nothing usually, right? It usually makes me panic over the wrong things. Right? Yep. It usually makes me react poorly, sometimes to the right things. And it's a roadmap that a lot of times leads us in, it misguides us, right? Because there's no context to allow us to actually interpret what we're looking at. So I think that idea that to your point exactly, is I feel like a lot of organizations that are maturing on their journey and now kind of looking to say, okay, because what I've seen with organizations that have started maybe from the infancy of their HOP journey towards maybe kind of their mid-level, right? And those would probably be more senior HOP organizations now are probably somewhere, I'm just, again, loosely saying, let's just say 3 to 5 years in on their journey, right? Now they're to the point to where when they first started, they kind of stripped all of that out. And now they're kind of growing to the point, so but maybe we should do something there, right? They're kind of getting curious about, okay, how do we actually measure or look into this stuff a little bit more effectively? And now the conversation is exactly that. It's how can we do that while inserting enough context into that it's actually, that actually makes some sense to us, that it actually tells us something
it's useful.
Meaningful. And again, I think that's it's useful to us.
Yeah. And particularly,
there's a huge conversation happening there right now.
Yeah. And remember that measurement needs to give meaning across the organization. So that measurement needs to give meaning to the people that face the risk in the front line. It needs to give meaning to those that are having to supervise or team lead. It needs to give meaning all the way up to those key stakeholders, those directors, those governors who are there to set direction. I don't know how they're getting that now.
Yeah. Well, and so I know, again, and we were talking, I think this feeds into a bit of sustainability too, but we're talking in the past, kind of as they first start down that road, the first thing they do is start kind of undoing a lot of the things that are they feel are harmful in the organization currently. Mm-hmm. So you'll typically see kind of error count clocks and TRR measures and obviously incentive bonuses and stuff related to those things start to go towards the trash can, which is probably the right direction for some of those things to go. Because a lot of those things, if there is even a thought of fixing them, they're usually there's so much retribution that's been associated with those things that it's hard. You can't really rebrand or redo at that point. So that's kind of gone into the dumpster. Some of the clocks that used to hang on walls are usually drug out in the street and beaten to a million pieces and then set on fire and then into the dumpster. But then they find themselves back to where we're just saying, of going, okay, now how do we build something that's meaningful? Right. So I think it's back to that important question, as we were just saying, that what's truly meaningful. And I think you'll see, at least in kind of more of the HOP safety differently school of thought, you see folks skewing towards, okay, how do we ensure the presence of positive things within our work worlds, the things that we know help to assure that work typically goes well or generates capacity or margin for us to fail safely. So I've seen some organizations going towards this idea of, okay, how do we ensure critical risk management, critical risk controls, which is a piece of that, right? That doesn't really help us in things that might completely bypass our systems of management, mm-hmm. right? That might just kind of whoop around the system. But then also to your point on engagements, that's one that I've seen quite a bit start to pop up is, you know, how often are we doing pre-event learning teams? Are we doing learning teams after events or operational upsets? How are we gaining insight into normal work through curiosity? How are we doing those engagements? Where should that kind of be for us? So with those thoughts, I've also seen that there's not been hard targets or goals kind of placed on those things, back to it being more of a looking glass rather than a yardstick. I haven't seen a lot of those organizations start to set those kind of hard and fast goals like they did with more traditional measuring, performance-based measuring, where it was like, well, the magic number is 20. So if you don't get to 20, it's bad. If you get above 20, it's great. It's pizza, right? So I haven't seen that come back as much, as much as I've seen it kind of go in this direction of what's meaningful, what do we need to make sure is happening? How do we make sure that that's there? How can we peer into that and ensure that that's there?
Yeah.
I think that's a really important shift in around what measuring is.
Because, you know, in my work in risk management, you know, we talk about that. If the organization is having to tolerate risk, meaning it's not prepared to accept it, but also it's also not prepared to make it unacceptable, so it's having to tolerate it, then when you tolerate risk, you actually have to have what we call a plan, a risk treatment plan, that is actively looking for opportunities to do more.
Yeah.
And what I've always said, particularly with critical risks, where is that plan?
Yeah.
And I get this blank look. Or I get shit like observations or audits. No. No, that is a mitigation on what you've put in place. No. I'm asking for the stuff that comes after. And they look at me blankly. And I think that's the opportunity, particularly around critical risk. What is our plan to find those opportunities to do more? Not fix it, because that's not what it's saying. Because organizations should be saying, there are always going to be a lot of jobs out there, Sam, where there is always going to be an uncontrolled element of that risk that can lead to a life-changing event.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So what do we look for the opportunity to do more? And I think that's the key thing. And I think there's two parts of it. There is, you know, getting that engagement at the front line, because by nature, those work teams are creating informal systems to deal with that gap. They're not sitting back and saying, oh, I can't do anything about it. Okay. Right. They're creating informal systems. So there is an opportunity to understand that informal system and to evaluate it and bring it into the system. So isn't that amazing if you do that?
It absolutely, yeah.
Then there's the other side, which is how can we change the work design to reduce that risk? So when I look at it, I'm saying there are some ways we can do it now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm super excited. And just so the audience knows, none of this conference, it's not a conference, it's scripted. Okay.
Conference, not a conference.
Yeah, none of it's scripted.
The not a conference conference.
Like we haven't sat down and said, you're going to do this 30 minutes, I'm going to do that 30 minutes. We're just going to roll. So it's the madness is going to be amazing. The madness will be amazing.
Well, people are always, at first, they're disappointed in my slides until they realize that I try my best just to have a conversation, because I don't know how your slides end up, right? But mine always end up just being random pictures of things that I thought were funny to put on slides, because I tend to not put words on slides anyways. I like to roll.
Yeah. I put a few keywords in. Over here, the regulator in New Zealand uses meerkats in its campaign for some reason. So my opening slide is a bunch of meerkats. And I basically said, what happens if the meerkats stop being curious? And the audience say, they die. Yep.
There you go. Yep.
So why are you
realize that you just gave potentially thousands of people their next safety meeting message, right?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
So I say to them, why are you stopping workers being curious?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
No, yeah, so you know what's funny? So but that's okay.
Stay with it. Side note, right? You had to put a disclaimer on your slide to stay away from meerkats.
Don't bring the meerkats to work.
But you know what's funny? What I was thinking about is I do construct real slides from time to time. There's a lot of these presentations that I'm giving where I just put random mm-hmm. pictures on the slide so there's something behind me. But I still get people that ask me for copies of their slides, which is the best part. Like, yeah, if you want the random pictures from the Grand Canyon, I took it a couple years ago.
Absolutely.
That's fine.
A total commitment from me. Any slides, you know, that people want to see, I'm happy for them to have them. It's not a drama.
Same here.
Yeah. And I don't know how that you feel, Sam, but I am more than willing for those that come along and participate. I am more than willing to get involved in a couple of virtual Zoom follow-ups with the group. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's something that we need to maybe plan on doing as a group. Maybe you, me, and Jay together. Maybe post, and again, not to dissuade any of those one-off conversations, because I'm right there with you too. I know you do this, I do this, I'm sure Jay does it as well. There's so many Zoom calls I jump on to people just for that exact reason. Just, and they're always surprised that you're willing to give them 15 or 20 minutes of your time, which always baffles me. I'm like, well, I'm just, this back to being fun. I do this because I really enjoy it. I'm here to help. I think that we should probably plan on doing that after the conference at some point. Just getting that group back together after we had some time to reflect, right? And have a little hour long virtual get together or something would be great.
Yeah, I'm open to it because you know I'm always in learning mode. Yeah, I'm going there. I'm flying. God, it's 15 hours to come to learn.
Yeah. Yep. And well, you got to throw in and maybe go on a four-wheeling adventure through the desert, and we'll get your picture next to a saguaro cactus.
Yeah, and some empty brass around me.
we'll go. I don't know. I was gonna say I might have to put a disclaimer, but we could go coyote hunting. Sorry for anyone out there that's anti-hunting, but we have an exorbitant amount of coyotes that must be dealt with in Arizona. Just FYI, look it up. Google.
Yeah, no.
We got lots of coyotes.
Same thing in our country. Things like possums are a pest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and culling is normal.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So there's tons of fun stuff that we'll get to do there as well. I don't think we mentioned it, but we're bringing books too, right? That's part of the
part of
the conference. We'll have books.
That is part of the Vicious Rumor, books. And I'm also organizing some resource packs as well. So nice. You know, we've been working on some, I don't want to use the word tools, it's not a tool, some little frameworks. So, you know, people just recently, workers love the 4Ds. They love the engagement. We've just built a little infographic for safety leaders to do a 4D safety conversation for the front line.
Nice.
Yeah, because
so tons of resources with this as well.
And you know, and we're not saying, so you know, a tool as you follow the set method. No, that's not what we're saying. But we're saying these are the six critical things around exploring, creating curiosity in the front line that workers relate to and engage with.
Give you a really solid starting point, right? I think
that's the
key for a lot of leaders. Just give me a starting point. Give me a bit of a framework that I can understand, and I can run with it from there.
And the funny thing is, awesome. and this is you know what I like about people like Rob Fisher. Rob Fisher says that if you give leaders a method or a way to do that, workers will see that and will start to use a similar method. Mm-hmm. Because leadership is actually leading by saying, this is how I lead. So workers start to realize, okay, well, actually being curious and asking these types of questions, that's how we roll.
Yeah, exactly. That's so much of, as we start to, as we continue to talk about operationalizing these kind of ideas and these techniques, and as we talk sustainability, that's ultimately the point of growth that we want to get towards anyways, right? That's just how we do business, right? That's just how we do things, you know? And that's kind of that output side that you're trying to achieve towards, right? Is that's just how we do business. We do it with a healthy dose of curiosity as one example, but right?
We don't need 4D banners coming off the thing or the TV screen saying, here's been the number of 40 conversations today. Okay, please, you know, don't go there.
I think what I see is if those things kind of, I'll break them apart. I think if those things kind of naturally emerge. So I'll give you an example. I was doing some sessions in an organization that were early on in their hop journey back then. And they had this, one of their things that they put out was like their main graphic that was plastered on everything was basically, you are responsible for your safety. That was like their whole campaign, right? And I walked into several different conference rooms, I mean, all across this organization. And every board, they had developed like their underground slogan at the front line, which was, we together safely.
Yeah. Right?
That was their thing. And completely not corporate approved. That was not the campaign. The campaign was, you are responsible for your safety, you know, and if something happens, you are responsible for not being responsible for your safety. And then that had kind of naturally emerged from the front line. It's like, no, wait a second. We do stuff together safely. That was kind of their thing. And it kind of naturally emerged. So I guess where I'm going with that is that I think there's two different things. There's the forced kind of aspect of going down this path of like, and what happens when we do that, is we slap 4D. It can be anything super awesome, amazing. Could be the best thing since sliced bread, right? But if we try to force it and just slap it on the wall through safety propaganda, it doesn't really do anything positive. And a lot of times people just view it as the next, they're like, oh, here's the next flavor of ice cream. And next week we'll get strawberry. This chocolate this week, we'll get strawberry next week.
Yeah, look, I've already been asked.
See some of that naturally emerge, people kind of putting stuff up here and there. But if you feel the need to force it through a banner or a slogan or a t-shirt, it's probably the wrong roadmap that you're using.
It's that whole tribalism. Speaking of which, I've just done a new t-shirt design. I'm creating a series of zero themes. And the first t-shirt basically says, it's been 0 days since I blamed and punished a worker.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're bringing some of this merch with you though, right? Isn't that some of the idea for the event?
After your inspiration.
Because can you touch on the story of some of the stuff that you're making? Because you're sharing it with me the other day a little bit and it sounded awesome.
Yeah. So we actually, I think two things, Sam. One was when we were up at Tampa at the Satchel Application Conference, everyone wanted Learning Teams merch. And we're saying, well, we don't freaking make it. We just, you know, get our stuff and put a label on it. So everyone said, you know, where can we get the merch?
Yeah.
And then talking to you about what you were doing, I thought, okay, all right, well, let's give it a crack. So we set up a website called safetydifferentlymerch.com. And we've come up with a series of, we call HOP 5. So the 5 principles of HOP. We've come up with a 4D's range of merch, the Learning Teams range of merch, and the Trojan Mouse range of merch.
Yeah.
And I'm just finalizing.
I'm particularly fond of the Trojan Mouse.
Yeah. And we've got great design, great graphic. And I suppose that tribalism that exists, we've come out with a range of patches, embroidered patches, that people can, you know, add to their clothing if that's what they want. But I was also thinking, you know, what I've been working on, and I got some stuff from Rasmussen, and we're doing some other, you know, blue line, black line, what sort of stuff. And some of it is just, you know, taking the piss. Some of it is more serious, but it's okay. But I was inspired by this notion of zero. Why don't we give an alternative zero?
Yeah.
So anyone out there who comes up with a really good zero concept that we can turn to merch, they'll get a free t-shirt with it on it. Okay?
That's awesome. And so much of the stuff. Yeah.
I got that inspiration from you. Okay. So rather than saying let's not talk about zero.
What?
Like a different zero.
You gotta. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And if I remember right, so all your stuff is locally New Zealand sourced, right? Isn't that a part of that too, that you guys are doing like...
Our ones are, but we can't do that in the US.
Yeah.
So
your other ones, yeah. But yeah, so like you're telling me something about like Learning Teams polos or something that you guys are doing,
yeah, so
or
our,
something
our that was...
I'm trying to remember the exact conversation.
Yeah, so all our product is either merino wool, so we got a lot of sheep here, okay?
Yeah.
And the nice thing about merino, it's super fine. It helps self-regulate when it comes to temperature. You're not hot, sweaty. Or our polos were all 100%, you know, cotton, real cotton. No formaldehyde, no.
Yeah. How cool.
Yeah. So we're going to try and bring some of that across.
I look forward to. I hope that you do. I gotta snag me some.
I'm bringing you some merch regardless. you're getting some merch regardless.
People can find tickets out there. I know you can find them on my website. I'm sure you've got some links out there. I know Jay's got them over on his site. Super easy to find tickets. If you just scroll LinkedIn for just a second, I think you can just type in hashtag Safety Worlds Collide too, if you're wanting to find some of those stuff.
Absolutely.
Some of the t-shirt giveaways or tickets or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yep. ViewStub. ViewStub is probably the super easiest way if you just go to ViewStub and search the events.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to meeting a great group of people. And Sam, finally meeting you in person. It has been a long
time. I know, right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. That's my favorite part. I was just having a conversation this morning with somebody and we were talking about that, and that exact idea of kind of in our community, you get so close with people that you have never met in face to face, right? That you feel like you have just known for, you know, there's folks in this community I feel like I've known basically since birth.
Yeah.
That you get so tight with this kind of group in this community, this amazing community, this amazing and diverse community that we call the HOP community or the Safety Differently community or whatever. All of us wackos trying to do things a little differently, right? There's so many great people in it. And so any opportunity to get to spend time with folks that's not separated by a screen and a camera and lots of miles is always something worth taking, because just getting together in a room, there's just power in that. There's just power in getting to spend time together and have these conversations face-to-face.
Yeah, so look, everyone out there, take advantage of it. Come and join us for 2 days of madness and learning.
Yeah.
I'm super excited.
It's going to be a blast.
Welcome to Safety Differently Merchandise, the premium sponsor for the Practice of Learning Teams podcast show. Our curated lines of inspirational clothing, headwear, cups, stationery and more, at Safety Differently Merchandise, is befitting of your Safety Differently journey. I am Arthur Taylor, Chief Designer. I have spent decades on Savile Row, and honored to bring my talents, for all fine purveyors and devotees of HOP, Learning Teams, Safety Differently, Safety 2, and the New View. Please visit the store, and purchase our fine goods at safetydifferentlymerch.com. And now, back to the show.